Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, April 16, 2019. The time is 9 a.m. In attendance are Senator Birch, Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, and myself, Stevens. I'm assuming Senator Costello will be along shortly. We have a quorum to conduct business. Today we're going to take up Senate Bill 6, sponsored by Senator Begich, relating to pre-K program funding. We heard this bill on March 21st. I ran out of time for the public testimony that day. So my intention today is to use that time, use the time we have today to allow public members to testify on Senate Bill 6 before we set it aside for further review. Any questions or comments before we begin? Okay, we'll start with some opening comments from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief since we described the bill. I've gone through the sponsor statement, the sectional fiscal notes, and I just really want people to have an opportunity to hear from the public on this bill. I will just reinforce that the idea of early education absolutely is essential to our success. We keep talking in not just the House and the Senate, but in my meeting with the governor just last week, I actually specifically brought up pre-kindergarten because he said, what solutions do you have that can make a difference in education? The Department of Education material we provided to the committee and that's open and available to the public indicates that when we do evidence-based early education, when we require higher levels of certification, when we ensure that they collaborate and cooperate with culture and with existing early education programs, what we find are the outcomes for kids are substantial. Whether it's rural Alaska or urban Alaska, those successes by third grade in terms of reading skills and now even eighth grade are significant. So with that, I'd rather hear from the professionals. You've heard from me before, and unless there's other questions for me, Mr. Chairman, I thank you for this opportunity to hear from the public on the bill, and I hope that we'll have an opportunity over the interim to fine-tune, based on today's testimony, the things we need to fine-tune.
Thank you. Senator Begich, any questions? Yes, Senator Hughes.
Thank you, and I believe I had another meeting, and so I missed this hearing. So one of the things I wonder about, because I've read that the early education can be helpful, but it balances out in the later grades, you know, if the teaching is good, that a child can catch up even if without it. So I'm wondering about those studies, if you could comment on that to the sponsor. And then secondly, I've wondered sometimes if part of the problem is some kids aren't mature enough for school. For instance, in Finland, they don't start school till I think 7 or 8, and they do fabulously. And sometimes, particularly little boys, maybe they're not ready. And so at age 5, they're in kindergarten, they just aren't ready. And maybe if we had the flexibility both directions where some children started later, they might actually do better. And I'm just curious, I know you're a fan of the Finnish model, and what you might say about that. So the research that shows that kids catch up, as well as the advantage of maybe a child actually starting later when they're more mature, if you want to comment on that.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Before we go on, glad to have Senator Costello with us. Senator Begich.
Sure. Let me comment on the first one, which is the idea of studies that show that the effects fade. It depends on the studies you look at and the quality of the pre-kindergarten that you're dealing with there. So in the instances where you use evidence-based, high-quality pre-kindergarten like the Oklahoma model or the other models that we looked at to help develop this bill, you don't see that fade effect as you go on. What you do see is what we're now showing with our own Department of Education's results, because we modeled this also working very closely with DEED. And those results show that not only are the accelerated differences clear, whether it's MATSU or whether it's lower Kuskokwim, which are two of the four examples I often give, but that those results now, as we're getting into the 10th year of pre-kindergarten programs here, consistent programming, we end up seeing those results retained even in those older age groups. That's number one. Number two, when you look at the Perry Pre-K project, which is the one that actually tracks those same kindergarten, pre-kindergarten kids all the way into adulthood, you'll see that their income results, their criminal justice interactions, a wide variety of these areas, they they end up not being wards of the state. In terms of the Finnish model, it's complex. So there are a couple of things to think about there. The Finnish model also has a fairly free school programming in the later ages. It's not all about age of maturity. In Alaska, we have a unique situation, particularly in rural Alaska, where we have a lot of dual languages, but also in Anchorage, where the majority of the school district is actually minority, where we have over 100 languages spoken in our Anchorage school district. In fact, my district, I think I've said this before, is, I believe, the most diverse state senate district in the United States. So you're dealing with a lot of dual education, dual language learners, and so the earlier that you can prepare people to come into our education system, the better off the data seems to show here in Alaska you are. So those are just the two very short answers I'll make to that question, Senator. But what I can do is produce a couple of different studies and other things that will support the comments I've just made. If that's sufficient, I'll get those to the committee. Because I believe after this public testimony, the goal is to hear more about this, and possibly I would request anyway that the committee consider doing a hearing over the summer where I can more directly address those questions. But Finnish model works. In Finland, we have a fairly uniform, if you will, language pool, whereas in Alaska we have, as I just mentioned, a fairly diverse one. I hope some of the experts can comment on it, or some of the local folks that will be commenting today can comment on it too.
Thank you,
Senator Bridges. Thank you, Senator Hughes. We have two folks who are in the room who invited to testify, Stephanie Berglund with Thread Alaska and Abby Hensley with Best Beginnings. Stephanie, if you'd come forward, please. And thank you for being with us. And if you'd introduce yourself.
Good morning. I'm Stephanie Berglund, the CEO of Thread, and Thread is Alaska's child care resource and referral network. Thank you to the chair and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 6. I want to introduce Thread briefly to say that we are a 33-year-old private nonprofit here in Alaska, and we work across the state to increase access to affordable and quality early care and education. Thread strongly supports expanding quality early childhood education services, including pre-kindergarten or pre-K. Decades of research demonstrates that pre-K makes a difference, not just in the short term to better support children being more prepared for school, but in the long term as children grow, become employed, and contribute to the strength of our economy. As you've heard, early and sustained participation in quality early education leads to more children graduating high school, higher lifetime earnings, reduced public spending on remedial education and services, and lower incarceration rates. This is especially true when we invest in struggling schools or target disadvantaged populations to help close the achievement gap. When we work to close the achievement gap before children start school, we put children on more successful school trajectory. So in response to the conversation that Senator Hughes addressed, I wanted to highlight a few recent surveys that I think are helpful in underscoring the positive effects of pre-K. In 2016, there was a study in Texas on their public pre-K programs that target at-risk 3- and 4-year-old children. It found that students who attended full-day pre-K programs scored 28 points higher on their standardized third-grade reading exams and had a 40% higher likelihood of reading at a college-ready pace. Programs with higher investments yielded even better results. In 2017 in Montana, students enrolled in their STARS preschool program showed a 21% overall increase in their school readiness. And findings published just this last December in 2018 in a North Carolina study, students who participated in their More at Four pre-K program reduced the likelihood of repeating a grade between third and eighth grade, and they showed a reduction in special education placement by 36%. Positive program outcome impacts were consistent from third through eighth grade, reinforcing a continuity of positive impact. Their findings also showed positive outcomes for more vulnerable populations, including students from economically diverse backgrounds who averaged higher scores than their counterparts without an early education foundation. In Alaska, our current pre-K services are working. Children participating in pre-K are showing growth in cognitive, language, literacy, and math development, and the pre-K program is meeting all 10 benchmarks set by the National Institute for Early Education Research. While these benchmarks demonstrate high quality, the current grants reach just a small number of children. Expanding this high-quality early childhood education through SB 6 will continue to promote school readiness, identify and provide support for Alaska's children who are most in need. It will maximize parental choice and continuity of care through collaborative mixed delivery systems and support quality activities and standards linked to more positive outcomes for children. Access to high-quality early education programs are desperately needed in our state. Currently, THREAD estimates that there are only half of the needed spaces for quality early childhood programs than needed. By expanding pre-K, we can support families with more choices by creating affordable and more accessible opportunities for children to learn in quality settings. To reap the full benefits of pre-K investments, we need to ensure the programs are of high quality. Elements of high-quality pre-K include highly qualified and, where possible, degreed professionals who are well compensated with benefits, low teacher-child ratios and small class sizes, parental involvement, minimum hours of contact or pre-K instruction, developmental screening and early intervention supports, and programming for smooth transitions to kindergarten. THREAD supports SB 6 as a way to grow and better sustain pre-K services. We encourage any pre-K services be provided in communities through a diverse delivery system. That means that pre-K in Alaska can be strengthened not only additional investments, but allowing for service delivery in ways that best meet individual community needs and work to align and expand existing early childhood education services and support infrastructure. This could include existing community-based programs in addition to school districts. Alaska's Quality Recognition and Improvement System, our QRIS, is called Learn and Grow here in Alaska, and that provides a framework for ensuring quality activities and can be used for all early childhood education program types, including pre-K. In addition to utilizing existing quality early childhood education programs for pre-K, we encourage you to consider full-day options. Studies have found that full-day programs, like those in North Carolina, may be more beneficial than part-time programs. And where they invested more, they saw that the strongest outcomes in third grade. Full-day programs provide continuity of care for young children. They reduce transportation needs between care settings, and they provide working families need. Most families are looking for full-day support so they can work and go to school. Alaska's not alone in investing in pre-K and growing our investments in early education. Just three states have decreased funding for pre-K in the last 2 years, and over 40 have significantly increased their investments. High-quality pre-K needs to be followed by strong teaching and learning environments in the early elementary grades, and funding for pre-K should be aligned with increased investments in young children beginning in infancy and include policies in alignment with the elementary grades and standards. Quality early education, including pre-K, needs to be part of Alaska's economic infrastructure as a means of creating a strong and prepared workforce. We can invest now or pay more later, and the evidence is clear that high-quality pre-K programs are among the most cost-effective interventions we can make with long-term payoff. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Berglund. I appreciate your comments. So wide-ranging, but if we could just zero in on one issue, that the comment that pre-K leads to lower incarceration rates, and I may have even said that in trying to defend pre-K, but I don't know where it comes from. And can you give us any facts on that?
Thank you, Senator, for the question. I'm happy to provide you with more specific research and connection for that. I don't have that in front of me today, but I think it's evidence because of just higher gains and returns of when we have higher graduation rates. You know, we see more adult success in terms of job security, higher income wages and earnings. They're reducing, you know, they're having more protective factors and resiliency to avoid some of those public ill wills.
Thank you, Ms. Berglund. So I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but okay. If you could provide us with that, I'd mm-hmm. feel more confident when I say that.
Yes, great.
Thank you. Senator Baggage.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And that is directly from the Perry Preschools study, which is the longest single study. Those participants that were in preschool when that study began are now in their 40s. And they actually analyzed employment, incarceration. In fact, in the sponsor statement, I refer specifically to it. Long-term studies such as the Perry Preschool Project also suggest students with access to high-quality preschool are less likely to be incarcerated and less likely to receive government assistance as adults. We've provided that, I think, before, but I think we should get an updated reference to it, and we'll make sure that every member of the committee has a copy of the Perry Preschool Study.
Great. Thanks so much. Thank you, Senator.
I have a question.
Yes, please, Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Stephanie, for your testimony. And you brought up several states, Montana, North Carolina. We do have, you know better than anyone, that we do have some preschool programs in existence in Alaska. Pretty impressive results in Montana and North Carolina as far as scoring in the 20% range and above. Do we have any information as far as how our Alaskan students have been done in preschool? Have there been any studies done on that where you can tell us how many points they're ahead?
Through the chair, thank you, Senator, for your question. I believe that information can be sought through the Department of Education and Early Development here. Again, I don't have that in front of me today, but we do have gains, and a lot of school districts have that information of how students more into early elementary grades are showing gains and outcomes from their pre-K interventions. So,
it's Senator Begich.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, in the packet, what I provided last time and then also last year, an update of last year's information is the Department of Education's early childhood programs, which show the actual outcome differences. And these are for LKSD, the Matsuburo, Anchorage School District, and Nome Public Schools. Those are the four that were measured at the department. And so I can make sure that you have another copy of that, if that's all right, Senator Hughes. But it actually identifies those changes occurring right here with our higher level evidence-based pre-kindergarten that the department has been promoting in its experimental $2 billion per year process that we have been doing.
Thank you, Senator Begich, and thank you, Ms. Bergman. I appreciate your being with us, and thanks for what you're doing.
Thank you.
We'll move on to an old friend, old acquaintance here, and ask if Abby Hensley would come forward from Best Beginnings. Very good to see you in Juneau again.
Thank you. My name's Abby Hensley. I'm the Executive Director of Best Beginnings, and I just need to show you my phone case that says Alaskans for Early Education. And on Facebook, there are a number of photos of people around the state showing that same message. Best Beginnings, as I think most of you know, is a combination of work with early literacy, with supporting Imagination Library around the state, and also with a number of ways that we support parent education. But thank you, Chair Stevens and committee, for hearing this bill and providing an opportunity for more conversation about early learning. My comments are not focused on the bill itself, but on one aspect of early learning that takes place in programs promoted by the bill and at home. Excuse me. There's a lot of talk these days about the poor showing our children make on state and national reading proficiency assessments. And most everybody has heard this by now, and you heard Stephanie comment on this as well. If a child is a good reader by third grade, he's more likely to graduate from high school, attend post-secondary education or training, stay out of prison and off welfare, and become a productive citizen, adding to Alaska's future rather than taking from it. And there are some studies that show that up to 70% of people who are incarcerated are functionally illiterate. So how does it happen that our children become productive citizens? Well, did you realize that in the very first years of life, it's a time of synaptic exuberance when a baby's brain makes a million synapses or neural connections every second? And the more that baby is played with, talked with, sung to, and yes, read to, the stronger that baby's brain architecture becomes, laying the foundation for learning. Just a few years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended for the first time that parents read with their babies from birth. Along with enhancing the development of early literacy and language skills, reading with young children helps nurture the relationship between parent and child and builds social emotional skills. And I think we see the results of that when we look at the resiliency studies and issues these days. Well, reading is a learned skill for humans. It doesn't come to us naturally. And a first step in learning to read has to do with vocabulary. The more words you know, the more sounds and words you recognize. Vocabulary, they say, strengthens every aspect of learning to read. In 2015, the Society for Research in Child Development found that children who had a larger oral vocabulary at age two, were better prepared academically and behaviorally for kindergarten, with greater reading and math achievement and better self-regulation. Well, how do children develop their vocabulary? We know an important way is when parents talk with children, when there's that back and forth conversation, even with babies, that's often called words and turns. It's talking and it's taking turns. In addition, a study in Psychological Science found that picture books are a richer source of unique words than conversation. The researchers found that picture books have some 72% more unique words than conversation, thus helping grow children's vocabulary. You might think about a book called The Napping House, for example, where that book uses six different words for sleep. Well, next in the path to reading comes phonological awareness, the ability to hear, identify, and manipulate sounds in spoken words and words in sentences. The emphasis is on hearing the sounds in spoken words. You might think about how knowledge of nursery rhymes enhances children's phonological sensitivity, which in turn helps them learn to read. And the fact that young children can't hear these sounds is not always apparent, and that's why developmental screenings early on are so critical. Well, and then there's phonics that we hear a lot about. The connection between the letter sound you hear and the letter that makes the sound. For example, the word ball, the sound of b, the letter B, that's phonics. And finally, print concepts, such as knowing print carries a message and that we read from left to right and from top to bottom. Printed language consists of illustrations and photos, letters, words, and sentences, and books are perfect for this. So to learn to read once they get to school, children need to have been exposed to books and reading in fun and pleasurable ways. In quality early care and learning programs, children are read to regularly from a wide variety of children's books, picture books, and teachers often extend the learning with puppets, with art activities, with songs, and so on. Well, this month, more than 18,000 Alaska children from birth to age five are having those important experiences. They're building vocabulary, they're hearing the sounds in letters and words, they're connecting sounds and letters, and they're understanding print concepts. All those aspects of getting ready to read right in their own homes through Imagination Library. So you see, it's about more than just getting a book in your mailbox. And here's what their parents tell us. 81% say receiving Imagination Library books has increased the time they spend reading with their child. 87% say reading with their child has brought them closer together. And 84% say their child is more excited about reading now. 87% say their child is happy when they read together. These positive experiences with books and reading are reinforced in the kinds of programs promoted in this bill. Well, it's pretty much a cliche to say that learning to read opens windows and doors to the world, but it did for me. And that's why I'm so passionate about ensuring that all Alaska children have books and the early literacy experiences they need to become good readers. It's really one of the best investments for our future that we can make. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mrs. Hensley. So we have a listening public out there. I wonder if you could bring us up to date on what's happening in early learning pre-K in the budgets of both the governor and the House so far, and the Senate is yet to pass its budget. But if you could just remind the public.
In the governor's budget, Mr. Chair, in the governor's budget, virtually all the funds for early learning have been deleted from the budget. That includes the $2 million for the pre-K programs, for the pre-K grants that have gone to school districts, as Senator Begich mentioned earlier, over the course of a number of years. There's $1.2 million for schools that were part of the Moore settlement. That's also gone. About $475,000 for Parents as Teachers, the home visiting program that's in a number of communities around the state. $6.8 million for Head Start programs, which has been the state portion of the part, at least a part of the match for the $40 million or so dollars in federal funds, and $320,000 cut from Best Beginnings. As a consequence of those cuts, I know that for Head Start, for example, they say that I believe it's 138 jobs would be lost, that programming would not be available for hundreds of children. And in some communities, and they estimate, I believe, some 12 to 15 communities may have no early childhood programming for their children. With the pre-K grants to school districts, certainly the department can provide you with information about that. As far as Best Beginnings goes, the $320,000 is really sort of the state's investment in this public-private partnership really since Best Beginnings began. There has been resources from the state to Best Beginnings that we combined, and then because of the way Imagination Library is set up in our state, very different from any other state in the country, and we're held up as a model, actually, by the Dollywood Foundation. But here in our state, there are 28 Imagination Library affiliates that are supported by Best Beginnings, with many of them with funding, but all of them with training and technical assistance. And so the resources that are needed to do that are way more than $320,000. In fact, that $320,000 is about half the budget of Best Beginnings, and the value of the books that Best Beginnings, in combination with local communities who also raise money for this program, the value of the books that came into our state is approximately $2,908,000. So with in 2018, there were some 223,729 books delivered to children in 112 communities around the state. Now, I've heard people say that, well, this is something that should be, that parents should take the responsibility for. And yes, parents do have the base responsibility for their children. But if you think about the fact that at this very low cost of $30 per child per year, families can have, from the time their child is born until he graduates from the program at age 5, could have as many as 60 books in their home library. And one of the things that they have found in other states, in Tennessee, for example, where this all started, is that one of the values that teachers say, kindergarten teachers say, of having children enrolled in Imagination Library is that not only do they come to school with more of this that I mentioned earlier about all these various things that we need to do in order to learn to read, but they have common knowledge that they might not otherwise have. They've all had the same books. They've read the same books. They have some of the same background information that is very valuable to that kindergarten teacher as she begins or he begins to pull a group of children together. There's another study, too, that shows that not only do children come to kindergarten with more of the early literacy skills, but also their math achievement is higher.
Thank you. Are you able to reflect on what the House has passed out? Are you? Do you know what that is? If you did share that with the public, then it'd be great.
Thank you, Senator. I believe that in the House budget is the same as the management budget for this FY19, so that there is the $2 million for the pre-K grants to school districts, the $1.2 million for the Moore schools, the $6.8 million for Head Start, the $75,000 for parents as teachers, and the $320,000 for Best Beginnings. So we're very pleased that that the House saw fit to make those decisions.
Great. Thank you very much. Senator Burge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Abby, thank you very much for your continued work and dedication to our children. The Constitution basically calls for, that the state establish a system of public schools. I don't think it really says K or pre-K, So frankly, the judgment and the responsibility, if you will, for funding those outside of the constitutional requirements are vested certainly with the legislature and the governor. I remember years ago we talked about the Molly Hooch case, which basically relied on as I recall, a young woman who said we're entitled, if you will, to an education under our constitution statewide. And I guess one of the challenges I have is we passed last year SB 26 percent of market value, so we have a finite amount of revenue. And the judgment call that this body will be making is a dollar in permanent fund dividend money versus a dollar in public services, if you will, and that responsibility is also vested with the legislature. One of the questions I have is kind of that transition point between 0 to 5, if you will. Obviously we all hope to have parenting and people with adults with parenting skills that are bring their children along successfully, but that's not always the case. And I see a lot of and I'm kind of curious about your perspective, screen time. I mean, I think when our kids were little, I think we parked them in front of Sesame Street, if I remember right, a long time ago. But today, we got more screen stuff, iPads and iPhones and everything. And I was wondering if you could speak to that and kind of the role that plays. And frankly, even in this committee, we've talked about tele-education, if you will, screen time, if you will, putting educators, if you will, on a screen in a remote location. But do you have any thoughts on that as far as the impact on a pre-K, a child, as to how that how that's transitioned in kind of in our lifetime and where you see that going and what role and responsibility should the state have in kind of either supporting that or moderating that in some fashion through the chair.
Thank you, Senator.
Through the chair, Senator Birch. Whoa, I could spend a day or so having that conversation with you. Maybe we can do that one of these days. But the whole notion of media screen time in children is something that's been of great interest to me for a long time. I first began to work with public television and young children and parents and child care providers in 1994 and have done a number of things with that since. So it is a great interest of mine, and I've kept up on some of the, what's happening. Maybe 2 years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics modified their position on screen time for children. And previously they had said, having done much research, but previously they had said no screen time for children under the age of 2. They've modified that now to say that screen time under the age of 2 should be with a parent, more interactive with a parent, and that one of the kinds of screen time that is most beneficial for children is FaceTime with their faraway grandparents or whatever, that when there's a real person on the other side of the screen talking with the child, that there is that interaction that you would almost have when the person is there in person. So that has been beneficial. But they still say our kids are probably spending way too much sort of unattended screen time. There's a section on the Best Beginnings website that has a lot of resources about this and help for parents. I might also say that there's been a study come out recently that said that while e-books are certainly fine for many children, they're probably better for older kids, in that print books are actually of greater benefit for young children than e-books. One of the things about e-books that happens, and people think that it's fun and cool, is that because there's so many things to tap on, and you know, this explodes over here and this various kinds of thing, that the child actually loses track of what the story is. And so if you want your child to pay attention to the story and have conversation about what's happening in the story and the illustrations, then a print book is much better for that.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Fascinating discussion. Further questions, Senator Bayich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned earlier developmental screening, and so one of the things I've been thinking about doing based on the work of the task force that Senator Stevens, myself, and others have served on was to see early education as an opportunity to do some of that developmental screening for audio and visual and other kinds of things. Is that something that makes sense to you, Abby, from your professional perspective?
Through the chair. Absolutely, Senator Bagich. One of the things that I know we talked about with the ARISE work with the Cook Inlet Tribal Council a couple of years ago was the fact that for most children, there was a hearing screening at birth and then not again until they entered school. And so there was a long period of time in which, you know, nobody knew whether the child, you know, couldn't see well, couldn't hear well. And as I mentioned earlier about the phonological awareness, a child has to hear the sounds in letters, in words, and in sentences in order to learn what they are and learn how to make sense of that. So if you don't know that a child can't tell the difference between p and t, between p and t, then you don't know how to help them learn that, or the kinds of interventions that might be needed. So absolutely, I think that kind of screening would be very valuable.
I appreciate that brief follow-up.
Thank you. Yes, please, go ahead, sir.
That was just the comments that were just being, you know, when you were just talking about the phone interaction. One of the things that we've identified for high quality early education, high quality early education, is in fact that it's about social interaction, and that is part of the Finnish model before seventh grade. You do a lot of work around social interaction. You prepare kids so that they're able to fall into a learning environment. At seventh grade, they call it something different. They call it nursery to kindergarten, but it's the same concept of what we're talking about. It is when you're thinking about early education, it isn't so much about screen time, really, is it? It's more about developing, you know, those reading skills, those social skills, those interactive skills. Isn't that sort of the way that you think about early education?
Through the chair,
I don't want to put words in your mouth.
One of the things that I had mentioned earlier was about that one of the reasons that the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended that parents read with their children from birth was to develop those kinds of social emotional attachments and skills that are needed as children move along in their life and go into school and beyond. And one of the things I think too, when we think about to Senator Hughes's point about what happens in Finland and that formal reading education doesn't start until about age 7, is that there's a lot of play-based education that goes on. And I think sometimes we lose that here in our country because, you know, people talk about how the first grade curriculum has been pushed down into kindergarten, and we're concerned that kindergarten curriculum will be pushed down into pre-K. So it's very important, I think, that the kinds of pre-K programs and the standards that we come up with are very much in line with age appropriate and developmentally appropriate standards that have been set, you know, and really are across the country. So I do have some concern that we might make, you know, things even more academic, which I think hurts children rather than helps them in the long run. And Senator Hughes, my daughter-in-law is from Finland, so I have some personal knowledge of what you were talking about as well.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Hughes.
I didn't have anything, but I just want to share. I read to my children. In fact, I taught them how to read before they entered kindergarten. But I didn't start when they were newborn. But my daughter, I have a little grandson, and she started when he was really just a few weeks old. It was fascinating. And while it became a nighttime routine, part of the teaching him to sleep through the night, and I got to participate in that. But it's been interesting. Then we got big enough where he could grab. All he wanted to do was put the book in his mouth. But he would still, you know, was in trying to turn the pages. But it was fascinating now that he's a little bit older, how he's a little over a year old now, how he just enjoys that time. And that's pretty young to, and he seems to be listening and everything. It's fascinating. So starting that young was something that I didn't do, but it seems to really work for the child. So I think it's a great idea and love it that parents are beginning to do that.
Thank you, Sarah Hughes. Thank you very much, Abby. I appreciate you and Stephanie as our expert testifiers here. And we do have several folks who have asked to testify as well. I'd ask them to try to keep their comments to 5 minutes if they would, and that way we'll get through all of them. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And we'll begin with David Neese in Anchorage. David, are you there?
Good morning. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, good morning, David. I hear you. Go ahead.
All right, good. I would like to point out a couple things. We have been doing pre-K in the state of Alaska for a very long time. The latest data I can go back and find is 2001. The ARISE report the McDowell's group did to go over the Cook Inlet Tribals program did a real good job of looking at the data from 2010 to 2016. And what's in your file there is kind of an incomplete snapshot. It only includes 1 year of the ADP, and there's many, many years to look back at, and it's been very consistent over those years, is that, you know, you have a gap between the native population in Anchorage and the non-native population in Anchorage, and I think Cook Inlet's done a good job on their approach using that McDowell. But what we are missing, and what we have been missing forever, is longitudinal data. You should be asking Deed to produce a report for you of, okay, we have these kids, they got federal numbers when they went into the Head Start program. Where are they now? Because we hear anecdotally that it increases the number of people that are incarcerated if you don't have a good pre-K. Anecdotally, we hear that you will have less of a high school graduation if they don't have pre-K. But when you look at that, you have to kind of look at UP School District, consistently one of the worst performing school districts in the state of Alaska, that has a 92% pre-K enrollment for the kindergartners. So 92% of their kids go through a pre-K program, and they have a very bad production out the other end. So looking at the data, you have to ask yourself, why are we spending $50 million a year on this in Head Start and state funding if it's not producing a result we can look at? When you look at other studies, you find that the lack of a male in a room in the household when the child is growing up is a better predictor of not doing well in school and being incarcerated. That hasn't been done. There's a statute, AAC 06712. It requires that everybody coming into kindergarten get tested. But there's no statute or law that says, what do you do with that data? When I was on the House Education Task Force 5 years ago, the commissioner at the time, the assistant commissioner, was working on a longitudinal study of the Head Start information, never completed and or never published. You have to have that data. I mean, if there is no constitutional mandate to give children any kind of education before grade 7. More decisions. She spells it out very clearly. So if you are going to make the choice to invest the money in this based on anecdotal evidence, then you really should go out and look for some long-term actual evidence of, okay, we've had the kids in here, been doing this for 18 years, 2001. Where are those children now? Did they graduate? Did they go to college? How are we going to measure success? Are they incarcerated? You have had many thousands of children go through the program, yet you have no data on what happened. Was it successful? Did it work? Is mailing books out to schools and giving away millions of books, has that worked? So without that, you have to kind of look at, like, what is the main driver in here? Well, what looks to me like one of the main drivers is that if you run this pilot program for 3 years, school districts get to count the children in their ADM, and that makes the multiplier effect. The further you are away from Anchorage, the more money goes into the program. So it's an interesting bill. I think it's got some merit, but without hard data of why this is working, yes, it employs people. Yes, it keeps the nonprofits, Best Beginning and Thread, keeps those folks employed. But is it doing what it was supposed to do? Give us a better quality kindergarten entry. There is nothing in that testing requirement in AA06712 that says districts might be able to tell kids, hey, you know, you're not ready yet. Let's try again. It's like when you start them and they're 2 years behind, you're going to have a higher incidence of kids qualifying for special ed. When you start them, they're not English proficient. They're going to struggle. You might be creating the problem by saying, okay, we're doing pre-K, we're fine. But without the longitudinal data, without looking and surveying your prisoners that are incarcerated in Alaska and see if they are products of the Alaska public education system or somebody else's, that would give you that hard data. So I would encourage, as you guys set this aside and work on it, go get those points of data. Deeds, former commissioners, assistant commissioner, had the study started in 2014 looking at the longitudinal, but that data he either kept and walked away with, or it's unpublished somewhere, and that needs to be got out so you can have an analytical look at the $60 million investment. That's all I got.
Thank you very much, Mr. Neath. Appreciate your comments. You make some very good points, and we will follow up on that. Let's go to in the room here now, Patty Olin from Alaska Public Health Association. Ms. Owen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Chair Stevens and members of the community, my name is Patty Owen. I live in Juneau, and today I'm representing the Alaska Public Health Association, which is a statewide membership association of health professionals and other community members dedicated to improving the health and well-being in Alaska. We're also an affiliate of the American Public Health Association nationwide. The American Public Health Association is on record as supporting universal preschool. I came today to remind people or let everyone know today that this is not just an education issue, this is also a public health issue, and it's an important public health issue. We consider education as one of the primary social determinants of health, along with other things like economic status, housing, and things like that, that are linked to well-being. In particular, education strongly correlates with prolonged life expectancy and improved health status. Early education is particularly important, not just for readiness for school, but in terms of brain development and positive social and emotional and cognitive development. We also know that adverse childhood experiences that we're very concerned about in Alaska have detrimental effects to young people and also are related to diseases and other adverse health outcomes later in life. And early childhood development opportunities can help to provide protective factors that can somewhat offset those adverse childhood experiences. So for those reasons, we're very supportive of early childhood development. for improving health and education. And when I speak of education, too, and early education, I do mean quality early education and quality education K through 12. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Owen. I appreciate your being with us. Any questions? Yes, Senator Birch.
I just had a fleeting thought on, Mr. Chairman, thank you, and thank you for your testimony. Vaccinations.
Yes.
Public health and children, I mean, as our children are growing up, you got them in, you got them vaccinated, and there seems to be kind of an undercurrent of pushback, which I don't think is healthy, but on vaccinations and you know kind of how that impacts you know schools certainly, and I just you know with your testimony and your affiliation, I would just be kind of curious as to your thoughts on vaccinations, not only in the pre-K but also just in general in public schools where you have lots of kids all kind of herded together through the chair.
Thank you.
Well, the public health community is very united in terms of supporting immunizations. Okay. That's all I can say.
Great. Thank you.
Some shocking things you're seeing on the news about, Senator Begich.
Earlier, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier, we were talking about developmental screening just briefly, and again, I'm looking at adding something to the bill here related to that. Is there a role you might be able to play in that process, helping us develop, an adequate developmental screening tool that can, or are such things, do you know of such things already? This came up in the task force on dyslexia. Mm-hmm. It's something that clearly Ms. Hensley described. And is this something you can assist us with, or are you aware of such
it.
Things?
I think we'd be interested, and I can look into that.
Thank you. Give that back to us, and we'll share it with the committee. Thank you very much. Again, appreciate you being with us, Ms. Owen. Let's go to online David Boyle, who is in Anchorage. Mr. Boyle, can you hear me?
Chairman Stevens, committee members, I'm David Boyle, and I'm testifying for myself. And by the way, I'd like to let Senator Birch know that I have had my MMR shots and my boosters. Anyway, firstly, I must say that I'm sure that everyone in this committee room, everyone in this building, and everyone in the state of Alaska wants what is best for Alaskan children. But we must proceed very carefully in our efforts to improve education outcomes and the futures of these Alaska children. Before we spend money on a perceived problem, we must evaluate the efficacy of pre-K programs in Alaska and across the nation. I've read most of the documents in your bill package and have some serious concerns regarding the cherry-picking of research to justify universal pre-K in Alaska. I'd strongly recommend the committee members do their own research, looking at both sides of the debate, and then taking the most reliable, gold standard, randomized research to decide if pre-K is actually the way to go. Initially, it may seem like the right thing to do, but pre-K may actually have some unintended consequences. The greatest unintended consequence may be to have less parental involvement in their child's education. You may ask, well, why would that be true? Well, you see, when the state is the main provider of early education, that which should be the responsibility of the parent, then the parent is absolved of the responsibility for that early education. And we all want parents to be more involved in their kids' education, both pre-K and K-12. In effect, the state is replacing the parent as the teacher of the child. In addition, if one looks at the pre-K research, the strong majority shows that there is no difference after third grade between the control group and those children that were enrolled in pre-K. Matter of fact, the most recent longitudinal study, the Vanderbilt study, showed that the control group children had higher achievements than those in the pre-K group. Unbelievable. Better yet, this Vanderbilt study was gold standard research, which compared two groups of randomly selected groups of children. Even the federal government study of Head Start demonstrated that there were no significant differences in student achievement after third grade. I have drilled down into some of the other states' pre-K programs, and I note that the number one rated pre-K program, believe it or not, is in the state of Alabama. That reading was done by the National Institute for Education Research. And it stated that Alabama's first-class pre-K program has 14 of the 15 of what researchers determined were essential elements for quality more than any other state. By the way, that program is a universal pre-K program. So I decided to look at reading proficiency in one of the largest Alabama cities, the capital of Montgomery. The overall reading proficiency rate in the Montgomery Public Schools, this is unbelievable, by the way, is less than 1% according to the state standardized test. So what really is the impact of an excellent pre-K program? We need to ask that question. Also, what's the solution? Well, I suggest that we pilot a program that has parents actively, I mean actively involved in their children's early education. Let's not push them out of the program. Let's get them engaged. A program that helps the parent teach their child phonics, reading, and basic math. Parents want to be involved, but they just don't know how to do it. I have faith in parents and that they know their kids better than the government does. Some early pilot program may be feasible, but throwing more money at pre-K will more than likely not produce what we do need. So let's get parents engaged in their kids' education by starting with pre-K. That would be a win-win for parents, kids, and the K-12 education system. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on this very important public policy. Thank you and have a great day.
Well, thank you, Mr. Boyle. I appreciate your comments. If you could let our staff here know where they would access that Vanderbilt study, that would be good for us to have that available. Our number here is 465-4925. If you could send that to us, we'll find it.
I will do that, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Boyle.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just make a comment.
Senator Begich.
There was reference made to Head Start specifically, and I just want you to remind the committee this is not a bill to expand Head Start. This is different than that, and I just wanted to be clear on that. And also in your packets, you'll see a list of studies that's attached. It includes a study of the Arkansas Better Chance Program, which shows that in Arkansas, those who went through the Better Chance Program scored higher on kindergarten measures of vocabulary, math skills, and understanding of print concepts than students who had not gone through that school experience. That study is available and cited. There are a number of other studies for every one of the states that provide some form of universal pre-K, and I would encourage the committee to take a look at those studies. No cherry-picking here, Mr. Chairman, just the facts.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Begich. Yes, Senator Hughes.
I don't know if this is an appropriate time to ask a question, but, you know, we're looking at the – we've talked a little bit about the Read by Nine effort and putting that policy in, which would be really focusing on ensuring every child is proficient in reading by third grade, and that would meet the same goal that the sponsor seems to be trying to attain here. So I'm just wondering if I'm wondering if we do the Read by Nine, if the preschool, at least the learning and the reading and the phonics, because I agree with Ms. Hensley as far as the healthy play and activities at the young age, and I'm again looking at Finland and where they really don't focus on the actual phonics and the letters and things till age 7, and then the kids just do very well. So I don't know if any of the studies are in states where they're doing the Read by Nine, because that you're not really purely seeing what the preschool's doing if you also have a Read by Nine approach. I just want to throw that out, because today, as we've been talking, we haven't really been talking about a child being ready to do math and these other things. It's really been a lot about reading. And as a state, do we want to do both, or should we really just focus on the Read by Nine, because we've got the kids in school for K-1-2-3 already, and the cost factor is a concern. It looks like it's been $11 million a year based on what we're doing now, and then if we look at the fiscal notes, we're talking about increasing that, and as I'm not sure which testifier mentioned, the multiplier effect for these children once they're added into the calculation of the BSA, we're talking about significant number of dollars. And so, Mr. Chair, I would like the longitudinal data from the Department of Education so we really know what, you know, is it working here? And we don't have to do the Head Start, the sponsorship, that's a different program. Let's look at, there are, I believe, pre-K programs and districts, and I believe they've been doing it long enough. We should have the data on how it's impacting them through all the way up through high school graduation.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. The department had to leave for another obligation, but we'll pass that on to them, and they need to get that information to us, that data. Let's go to Dr. Bridget Weiss, who is in the audience here, the superintendent, I believe, Juno Douglas High School. Thank you. If you identify yourself for the record, Dr. Weiss.
Good morning. It's Dr. Bridget Weiss, actually, Weiss. But that's okay. It gets pronounced Weiss often. Thank you for this time this morning to talk about early childhood. I thought that I would just share a little bit about what's going on in Juneau. This has been a project very dear to my heart as in the time that I've been in Juneau. And as a community, we have spent lots of time in the last few years talking about early childhood and really high-quality child care. So we're looking at 0 to 5 as a community in Juneau. We have grave concerns about the availability, capacity for high-quality child care, as well as quality. Mayor Weldon in Juneau put together a child care task force, of which I am part of. There are 7 of us, assembly members, myself, and a couple of community members, really tackling this and deciding as a city what can we contribute and what should that look like. So in Juneau School District, we use some local dollars, we use some dollars from DEED, and then we've also applied for and been fortunate enough in the last year to partner with communities in Southeast through the STEPS grant that AASB is facilitating for us. That's a program that has lots of different levels. Pre-K is one slice of what we have there, and that's a 5-year grant. So we're loving that we have some longevity to be able to look at. I think your questions about data and tracking is super important. It's an area that I am hopeful after my first year of superintendency, when there's a bit of calm in July, to sort of set the course on some of that data for ourselves. One of the pieces that I would want you to think about when you look at that data is there are always so many variables. Educational data is seldom scientific. When we, as an example, look at our targeted population for our early childhood programs, we are targeting our most vulnerable population. So we want to find our students who are already in economically disadvantaged homes. That's who we want. So we have a program that we've started, again, through multiple sources that we're calling Kinder Ready. We host students, children 3 to 5 in that program. We have 3 classrooms. We grew last year. We had 1 classroom. This year we have 3. About 60% in each of those classrooms are students in economically disadvantaged homes. So one of the pieces as well that we gain, I believe, through that is our family engagement. So a little different slice of what we heard testimony a minute ago about family engagement and responsibility for children's education. I would love if every child in Alaska was in a home that was high functioning, rocking it, and all the activities around their children were a priority, and they came to us ready. The reality is we don't. We have families in crisis across Alaska, sometimes due to language challenges, as Senator Begich said, sometimes due to economic factors and other trauma experiences that our families have here in Alaska. So when we track that data, we're tracking data we have to know for our most vulnerable students in some cases, and then what impact are we making? We want to see impact, but it also is relational compared to families who may not have any challenges who enter kindergarten. So that's just a thought about that. We commit 13 classrooms currently to preschool in our district. 7 of those are special education programs where we have typically developing peers alongside our students with special needs. And then we have our 3 Kinder Ready programs. We also use 2 of our classrooms to support Head Start. So in kind, we have 2 classrooms in our district that Head Start uses to run their program, just present in our 2 of our elementary schools. And then we have a Montessori program that's a blended pre-K and kindergarten classroom. So it is a strong commitment. anecdotally, I also served for a couple of years in an upstart program here in Juneau called Family Promise that supports families that are homeless and helps them get established and onto transition into their own homes. In that role, I did some volunteering, obviously, in our program, and a child I met there that was a part of Family Promise, I gained a relationship with through play in that environment. I then walked into Kinder Ready classroom last year the first day, and there she was. I didn't know the connection. You know, she beamed, she saw me, we played. This year, I was at Gastineau Elementary School earlier this year subbing for a teacher because we were trying to do some model classrooms for math instruction and we didn't have enough subs, so I said, I'm it, I'll come over. So I was in a kindergarten classroom. Guess who was there? This same little girl who beamed, tried to make the connection because now it had been a full year. But to me, that's just this beautiful example of the continuum that our most vulnerable children need. And so there's a lot of layers. There's academic, there's social emotional, there's self-regulation, there's parent engagement at an earlier level where we can guide families that may not know how to read to their children, right? What it means to connect with a school earlier in their child's experiences. Many of our parents have had traumatic experiences in our system. So they don't come running to us for support. But if we can meet a need for their kid, they enter our systems earlier, and we can also start influencing that home piece. So there's just a lot of moving parts that I believe do make a difference, and I think we can start putting some of those data pieces together.
Thank you, Dr. Weiss. Appreciate your sharing your information. And a superintendent as a substitute teacher, that's probably a really good thing to do once in a while.
Yes, yeah. It was fascinating. Kindergarten and then the afternoon of 4-5 class, so I got to see the whole spectrum.
Great. Thank you very much. Yes, Senator Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for being here today and for your advocacy for our children and your good work, obviously, in the classroom. I have, over the years, been in a number of different capacities, but periodically with a large group of employees, you look at on-site daycare for employees, they have young families, if you will. And where, just because of your familiarity with this community, where are we with that? Is that, I'd just be curious to see what, you know, if there's a support for that, or, you know, if there's commercial or government support for that, or you know, just how that might be impacting, because obviously the 0-5, that's going to be a component as well through the chair.
Yes, through the chair. Senator Birch, we do have some, for instance, our Coast Guard in our federal building here in Juneau, we have a daycare that supports Coast Guard as an example. We have had closing daycares because of the financial challenges of doing that. So that's one of the things the Child Care Task Force is looking at. And really, we're looking at, it after lots of discussion, the continuum 0-5, that is child care. If a parent wants to work, that's child care. We want that to be high quality. The learning environment changes. If a learning environment for a one-year-old is high-quality child care, a high-quality learning environment for a four-year-old looks different. It's what we call preschool or early learning. But that continuum, that whole thing, is what we're focused on. And we're really being creative and trying to look at where in Juneau we can look. Is it some of our major employers? If I had more space in the school district, could we do a cool thing there where that was the place where teachers brought their preschool-age children, et cetera? So we are looking at all different levels in terms of how we increase capacity and quality here. One other piece that came up earlier was healthcare screenings and such. So one of the other things we're federally required to do is child find. So for our special needs students, we are required, we advertise multiple times throughout the year, our pediatricians are aware, and we are obligated to pursue students that have special needs if they have not been identified yet. And it happens in a lot of ways, shapes, and forms. These experiences are one way that we can get at that. We also partner with our Association for Educating Young Children, AEYC, at our early learning fairs, and we attend as a school district and do screenings there for families that attend that. So we do it in a variety of ways, but this definitely gets our eyes and experiences on children very early and be able to identify those that might have disabilities that haven't been noticed yet.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Weiss. We'll go to next to Posey Boggs, who's online, and come back here in the room for Tim Parker. So, Ms. Boggs, pleased to have you with us. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Senator Stevens. Thank you for having this hearing on SB 6. My name's Posey Boggs, and I'm representing the Alaska Reading Coalition. It takes, like, way too long to go over all the groups, so I'll skip that if you don't mind. But we all care deeply about reading, and it starts in infancy, actually. And so we definitely support Ms. Hensley and everybody else who talks and defines high-quality preschool early literacy screening. And if you are interested, I have the testing protocol or the screening protocol that I use, and I have colleagues outside who can verify what they would recommend for early literacy screening, starting as young as 3 years old. Of course, the result of screening is to produce intervention if needed. I want to tell you that if we already had high-quality early literacy screening in preschool, I wouldn't be tutoring a young, adorable little student who's 10 years old. I go to her house at 7 o'clock in the morning, most mornings, and it's quite a slog at that hour. Nor would I be teaching a 35-year-old constituent of yours, Senator Stevens, had he had early screening in preschool. And he's now learning to read with my help, along with an online reading coach that he has 24/7 access to. But had we had early screening, he would not be seeing me. I'd like you to consider early preschool screening as a parent right, parental right. Parents do not have the knowledge to be aware of what to look for their children. Do parents naturally know about phonological awareness, phonemic awareness, orthographic mapping, phonological memory, rapid automatic naming, executive function, and working memory? I don't think they get that in the parenting book. So we can think about early childhood screening as a parental right. I'd like to address a couple of Senator Chu's comments through the chair, please, regarding Finland. And what is important to know about Finland is that the language spoken there is easy to learn to read. You have one letter, one sound. English has 26 letters, 44 sounds. It's extremely difficult. It's considered an opaque language. It is not a transparent language such as Finnish or Spanish or even Turkish. So when we must start early literacy for reading and writing and spelling as early as possible because of the nature of English. The other thing that I want to remind you is the first thing Finland did when they went from a very poor education system to one of the best in the nation is the first thing they did was they closed down every school of education in the country except five of the best, and they standardized their teacher preparation courses. So that little fact gets buried in the this love affair that we're having with Finland. So that really does worry me that we think we give way too much credit to Finland. The other piece, Senator Hughes, is that through the chair, is we don't catch up. The NAEP shows that 12th grade reading outcomes are just as dismal as 4th grade reading outcomes. And if we did significantly catch up as the years went on, we wouldn't be experiencing the cost of illiteracy in the nation when, $250 billion is the cost to industry because we don't start in preschool with screening and intervention.
Thank you, Ms. Boggs. If you could wrap up, please. We're running out of time.
Oh, geez. All right. I will, let's see, wrapping up. Information on incarceration, please consult U.S. Senator Cassidy, who led the charge on reading screening for incarcerated people in the First Step Act. He has all the data that you'll ever want. And that's it. I'm here for questions if you have any. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and I wish we could go to questions. I'm going to allow Senator Hughes, because she had her hand raised, but beyond this, I'm going to ask folks to hold their comments on the committee. We just need to get through this and make sure. Last time we had to cut folks off, so I want to make sure we get through this time. And Ms. Boggs, if you have any further written statements, we'd really appreciate hearing from them. Senator Hughes.
I'm fine. We can keep
moving. Okay. Thank you, Senator Hughes. So, again, we're going to try and move through all of these comments before our time is up, and we'll ask Tim Parker to come up, please. Mr. Parker.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. I'll make these quick since it sounds like we're moving along. My name is Tim Parker. I'm the president of NEA Alaska. I'm a high school English teacher from Fairbanks. I just want to say that, one of the things that we care about, the 13,000 members that I represent, is student learning. We love student learning. That's what we think about every day. That's what makes us happy. And we, as educators, we work with kids from ages 5 to 18 primarily. That's where most of our expertise is. But we definitely rely on what happens in the pre-K zone in order for the learning to happen in there. And so we see the two as interlinked. NEA Alaska definitely supports SB6, and we just want to put that on the record. When I moved here almost 3 decades ago, I remember being surprised by the name of our education department, DEED. Everyone always calls it DEED, and you want to like DEED. Everywhere else, it's the Department of Education, but we're the Department of Education and Early Development. And I think this bill is helping us to push us in that direction. I'm proud that we put that into our name as part of our state, and I think we should lean into that promise, and I think this bill is pushing us that direction. I also want to remind you, some of you were on this committee, the Alaska's Education Challenge Committee that put together some work that DEED is really driving what DEED is doing in this area, it's the way to go. It's the driving force that we're using within the professional organizations to move where we're going. And at the center of that is an excellent education for every student every day. And if we're going to get to that, we have to focus on where kids are before they enter into our schools. One of the pieces that I'm most proud of in this one, I am proud of it, and I'm also happy that it's there, is the Cultivate Safety and Well-Being, the blue area on there. It's a recognition in our state that we're not like other places in the world or even the country, and we need to put an additional focus on making sure that some of our most vulnerable students are getting what they need in order to be able to achieve the learning that we want them to achieve. And learning doesn't start when a child hits 5. That's not the first day that they learn. In fact, they pretty much learn from the second they arrive on this earth. They're with us and they're learning, and it's an important piece of what we're doing. And that safety and well-being piece also is in play. We can't wait till age five before we start to worry about whether or not they're in a safe environment. In fact, those environmental effects are having dramatic effects on how students are doing. A couple people mentioned the Alaska developmental profile for kindergartners. That is something that our approximately 600 kindergarten teachers do almost every year with students. The results aren't particularly stellar. There's 13 things they look for as kindergarten teachers as kids are coming in, and the results on that are not good. Approximately 70% of students come in with fewer than 10 of those benchmarks being ready to go, and that's Deed's study from 2018. I would point you to a couple other items. The return on investment idea, which was discussed in this committee in the past with James Heckman, the Nobel-winning economist from the University of Chicago. His research is excellent in this area, and he points to a 13% return on investment on what we do in the pre-K area. Now, I like investing, and if someone could tell me I could definitely get 13% next year on something, I would be very interested in that, and I think we should be as a state interested in that too, because the numbers actually go down. The longer we wait, the less the return on investment. Just a couple more points. The quality pre-K of the program is really an important point. So when people talk about studies, and I do appreciate Senator Begich has put together a very large volume of research on this area. And when you look at studies and somebody says, oh, this study shows one thing, it's usually the lack of quality in that particular program that rises to the surface quickly. So you have to look at that, and you have to decide whether the pre-K program is actually of quality and whether it's working. And I think you have to go back to Deed, and you have to look at your professionals and say, we need a program that actually works, and we need programs that work and work with parents and fit Alaska the way Alaska actually is, because, you know, we're different than other places, and we want our kids to be successful. So look to your professionals and invest in Alaska's children. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barker. And if you could provide us with that, a little more information on, is it Heckman report on 13%?
Yes, Heckman, yep.
Anything you provide us would be helpful.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You.
Senator, no, I'm sorry, we don't. I just want to make sure we get through. Lots of questions, and so clearly this is not the end. We're going to have further hearings after the interim and have a chance to get through all of the issues that we want to. But let's move on to Patty Merritt in at the Fairbanks LIO. Patty, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
My name is Patty Merritt, and I'm here in Fairbanks. I am a professor at the University of Fairbanks for the Community and Technical College in Early Childhood Education, but I'm speaking today for myself, not on behalf of the university. I have over 40 years as a professional in early care and education, and I'm also Type A certified, although I haven't kept my certification up. I did qualify that way. But I've spent most of my career not in the public schools, so I let that certification lapse. I'm very excited about this bill. I think it's wonderful that Alaska is looking at a universal pre-K kind of option. I have some concerns about the bill, three of them in particular. The first has to do with the qualifications of the lead teacher and the adults that would be in the classroom with children. Early childhood education is often misunderstood. And the best comparison I can make is to the health field. So you have people who are prepared in health. Maybe someone is a dental hygienist, and another person is a phlebotomist. Well, most of us don't want the person who works on our teeth drawing our blood, or vice versa. There's specialized training. And we recognize that in the health field, but I don't think we recognize it well enough in the education field. So this bill talks about 6 early childhood credits for someone who is certified already. And I would say that the training is very, very different, the course of study. And to say that someone who is certified in a Type A qualification to teach K-12 or K-8 is not qualified necessarily to teach very young children. And some of the differences I can point to in the preparation would be in child development. Most of the K-12 kinds of certified teachers would have one course in child development that would cover 0 to 18. In early care and education, in early childhood, we have 3 courses that cover that. We've got prenatal to age 3, then we've got 3 through age 8, then we've got adolescence through the lifespan, 3 credits in each of those courses so that we can go into depth and really give a foundation of child development. Curriculum is very different. The preparation for public school curriculum versus the preparation of what you need to know if you're an early childhood teacher. Assessment. Assessment in public schools, much more standardized. Assessment in early childhood, having to do with performance-based and specialized observation skills on the part of the teacher. Child guidance is another area near and dear to my heart. I heard Abby Hensley say she could speak for a whole day on one of the topics. I could speak for a whole day on child guidance. But basically, the Type A Certified Teacher Training Program talks about class management. Behaviorism is a key factor. You've probably seen the things where they flip the red, yellow, and green cards, or they use a checklist. Assertive discipline is one of those kinds of standards. And that's actually been proven by research to have long-term negative consequences for children. Whereas in an early childhood child guidance, we're looking long-term. We're looking at the whole child. We're talking about how to build their own self-discipline and internal controls, their moral compass that they carry with them, not relying on the behaviorism tokens. So another element where the teacher preparation is very different. To say that a teacher who is Type A certified could get 6 credits and maybe not even have those when they start out as a lead teacher is a significant gap in this bill, and I would look forward to seeing some changes in that area. Another of my 3 points would be that I think there are some missing elements when it talks about quality. The research shows that ratios are very critical, and group size, and I would like to see those addressed in the bill. I teach Sunday school. This past Sunday, I had 30 4-, 5-, and 6-year-olds in a small room. I had 2 other parents who are not early childhood qualified, but they're very capable and skilled as parents, and I had a couple of older siblings helping. I can tell you 30 kids with 3 adults is very difficult and complicated. The group size, you just can't give the quality. You have so many kids who are asking for your attention, and they're trying to talk over each other, and they want to push the other one out of the way to show you what they're doing, and they're calling to you, and you cannot work. And a relationship-based education program with 30 kids, and I worry that if we go into the public school setting and we don't have a bill that addresses group size as well as the ratios, that we're going to be missing some important quality efforts. And public schools, due to the funding problems and the space problems, are often working in conditions where group size would not be advantageous for young children. I've heard lots of references to quality, and those would be some that I think would be really important to look at.
Thank you, Professor Merritt. And if you could sum up, please. Sorry, we have a time schedule here, but I appreciate your thoughts. And I'd also say, if it's possible, if you have any written recommendations, Professor, we would greatly appreciate having those as well. Please go ahead.
Yes, I will cut my testimony short, and I'll be happy to send you something in writing. My 3rd point was that whatever happens with this bill should be equitable to what's required for child care licensing standards. We don't want to have some children served in child care who have to meet 1-to-10 ratios in a private setting, and then have children in the public school be able to be 1-to-15 or 1-to-20. So look at what's required of child care in a private setting as well.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Really valuable information. Appreciate it. If you could send us your any additional comments. We'll move on to Judy Elledge in Anchorage. Judy, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you very much. I have testified before on this issue. I'm going to testify again, and I'm going to be pretty honest that having been working in Alaska education since 1981 and in rural and Bush, Alaska since 1997, I sometimes want to scream when I hear the testimony, because all of the things that people are requesting are things that have been done, tried, and didn't happen. And I think that is my biggest frustration when I think about when I think about the amount of money that this is costing. We are not, again, we're not addressing the truancy that most certainly is happening, which causes a problem. And if you think attendance is poor in K-3, it is worse in pre-K in my experience. I have worked in since 2003 with low-performing schools as the state system of support. I have worked with the lowest of the low. I was a principal in Copper River, which was not one of the lowest, so I have a very, very background in actually working on the ground in the schools with teachers and students. And I just think at this time when we're cutting education K-12, it is baffling that we would be discussing adding pre-K when we are really struggling in K-3. Maybe we would be better to focus on improving what we currently do before adding additional grades to bring more on a state agency, a district, and a school. I support the Read by Nine efforts because I have had experience in these efforts, and we have been doing early screening since we brought Roland Good of Bibbles from the University of Oregon up here in 2001. This was a requirement that was then taken away from the district. They don't have to do it. And we also had Roger Sampson. I worked for him. We did, for teacher qualification, there were several million dollars spent on Alaska Reading, which was an online course to ensure teacher quality. And all of the issues, including the oral awareness that has been talked about, for teachers, and it went down in flames as the teacher unions fought us at every moment because they did not want to be told how to teach reading. So I guess my frustration is today, I have worked in a school where when I went into the school, all of the students, K-5, most certainly in grades 1 through 5, were out of kindergarten level. With a strong program, a strong principal, we were able to turn that school around, and everyone was on grade level, but it took 6 years. My issue here and what I beg you with is, many of these districts that are low-performing do not have the capability to do something like this, or there are no consequences for them not doing it. I started work under No Child Left Behind, and I had somebody in Washington State say, why are you guys not making these districts do what they need to do? And that is a really good question. So I encourage you today, we know what needs to be done. There is not anything in this testimony that we have not done, we do not know about, but the Department of Education has very limited resources, and they also don't have a lot of authority of what can and cannot be done. So my hope is that we really look at K-3 reading. I assure you, I have had kids come into kindergarten that were well behind where they were supposed to be, and after 6 weeks, we had caught them up. This can be done. I have done it. People know, you can ask anybody about it, but our biggest problem is when we try to do these things and mandate them or want them to be done a certain way, there is a huge outcry of don't tell us what to do. And that's extremely frustrating, and I'm being very honest today because, like I said, I've listened to years and years of this testimony, and nothing ever changes. So that's my comment. Sorry.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Elledge, and appreciate your thoughts and also your contribution to education here in Alaska over the years. Thank you. Move on to Esther Pepin from Naknek. Ms. Pepin.
Good morning. My name is Esther Pepin from King Sam in Bristol Bay. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Maybe get a little closer to the mic if you can.
Okay. Thank you. I am the Early Learning Coordinator of Bristol Bay Borough School District, a mother of a 3-year-old, and a member of Bristol Bay Borough community. I would like to speak to the impact that pre-K funding has had on our community's young children as a result of publicly funded preschool. As a recipient of the pre-elementary grant, our community has been able to provide every 4-year-old with a quality half-day pre-K program for the last 3 years. We're in our third year. This has had a significant impact on our children's development, kindergarten readiness, and development of a culturally responsive education program. With continuation of support for pre-K funding, we are hopeful that we can continue exploring a sustainable model for ensuring that early learning support is a priority for our community and that our children's needs are being met. The pre-elementary grant is focused on not just providing a one-size-fits-all preschool program. It is a challenge to ensure that districts are developing a model responsive to their community's needs by developing a model that supports a continuity of care through a mixed delivery system. By supporting SB 6, you will be working towards this model as well. Continuity of care between school and home. We respect the educational role of parents, elders, and families and their rights to participate as their child's first educators, not just at home, but also in the decisions in the classroom-based early learning setting. Continuity of care between birth through five and preschool through third grade, or kindergarten through third grade, ensuring that preschool is not a silo learning experience. And then continuity between Alaska Native ways of knowing and a Western education system. It has also ensured our young children are ready for kindergarten. Before we received the pre-elementary funding, our students averaged between a 25 and 35% fully ready for kindergarten based on the Alaska developmental profile. And there was some change in how that was reported a few years ago, and so this is just looking at from that change on, so about the last 5 years. And in the last 3 years of receiving funding, measuring the last 2 years specifically, our students are now between 67 and 100% fully ready on the 13 out of 13 goals that the kindergarten teachers measure. While this data is reflective of just a few years, with your support, we hope that this readiness will be reflected in future years in measuring kindergarten readiness and also measuring scores, not just in literacy, but math and other areas in third grade and beyond. Funding has allowed the school district to provide a responsive program that meets their social, emotional, cognitive, and physical needs by providing daily opportunities for inquiry-based play. It has allowed us to provide and train teachers, select and implement research-based inquiry curricular resources, and develop a rich supportive environment that can support them as they begin to develop an understanding of their world and the skills they need to succeed it. As a mother who will be having a child in preschool next year, I hope that we will have access to support his needs and that he will have a rich environment to socialize and play with other children as he prepares not only for kindergarten, but also his educational career and life. Please hear my concern as a representative of many families, not only in my community, but across the state. And I'm available for any questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Pepin. I appreciate your experience and your years teaching, and thank you very much. We'll go on to Laura Bonner, and I'm going entirely by when people joined us. Ms. Bonner is in Anchorage. Laura, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good morning. And I my name is Laura Bonner, and I'm retired and been in Alaska since 1972. I support SB 6 because early education is a really good long-term investment for our students and our state. I submitted written testimony at last month's hearing regarding the benefits. I want to add to my comments. I particularly like the Section 3 that creates the stair-step grant program. This will help the lowest performing districts improve. Many of those are in rural areas with less access to programs. I also like in that Section 5 the language regarding cultural content in the local communities and accommodations for the needs of all pre-K children and their families, regardless of socioeconomic circumstances. While this bill directly speaks to 4- and 5-year-olds, I think 3-year-olds should also be included. My 21-year-old adopted daughter has autism and was in the special needs education at the age of 3.5 because of the testing performed by a program for infants and children. I didn't know anything about autism. It was through the pre-K program that I learned how to help her as a parent. Without the pre-K program, I wouldn't have known where to get the information or how to break down those barriers of communication. Autism is not always identified early, and Since there is a huge spectrum from mild to severe, some are never diagnosed. So I know all this costs money, but the early investment will cost us all less. And please make, without the, then if we don't make the investment. I urge you to find the revenues to fund this. It's in your power to do so. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you so much, Ms. Bonner, and thank you for your career as a teacher here in Alaska. Move on to Jennifer Schmitz from the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Chair Stevens, and to the committee for hearing this bill and the testimony related to early learning. I currently serve on the board for the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals, and we strongly support early childhood education. I have been an elementary principal in Anchorage for the past 13 years. That was following 15 years as an elementary teacher. I've seen many changes in our state that include both more rigorous standards that began in kindergarten and also many changes in the overall fiscal and personal situations that our families are in. I taught kindergarten my first year of teaching in 1990. All but one of the students in my class that year had been to at least 1 year of preschool. Today at my school, I have 85 kindergarten students, and there of those 85, there are 12 who attended some type of a preschool program. These young boys and girls are immediate leaders in our classes, the ones who were part of preschool. They are immediate leaders in kindergarten, and my colleagues and I have had many conversations and agree that we see them remain leaders long after kindergarten is over. Unfortunately, quality programs are not available to all families. They're both difficult to find and are expensive. While the number of students in high-quality programs have decreased, the standards for what our students are expected to do in school have increased. When my own 22-year-old son went to kindergarten, it was a half day. Excuse me. They played. They learned social skills. They did art projects. They had snack. They had rest time and a basic introduction to letters and numbers. Today, my kindergarten program is full day. Students are expected to learn all of their letters, all of the letter sounds, letter blends, the parts of a story, story structure. They need to be able to compose and decompose numbers, add and subtract fluently to five, recognize shapes, three-dimensional shapes, create new shapes by putting others together. Those are just some of the examples. By the end of first grade, students are expected to read 53 words per minute fluently, along with many other skills across the curriculum. What has happened is we've raised our rigor, which I do believe is a good thing to compete nationally, and we're always talking about that. But what we've done is decreased what our families have access to prior to starting kindergarten. I have students every year, many of them, who walk in the first day of school. They've never held a pencil. Nobody's ever read a book to them. Many of them have never heard English at home. They have not ever had to sit in a circle, stand in a line, eaten in a cafeteria, learned their colors, and many, many more things. Our teachers spend much of the year being that pre-K teacher, while also being expected to be the kindergarten teacher. As you can imagine, this makes it difficult to get them all where they need to be at the end of the year. And unfortunately, many students begin their school years behind. This can be difficult to make up, and for some, they never really catch up. Another thing that pre-K does for our children is that it gets parents involved early. They learn how to talk to their young children about the importance of reading to their kids and much more. As Ms. Hensley said earlier, the importance of reading at home and of talking and interacting with your child is vital in getting them on the right track for reading. However, our young parents, without early childhood programs and resources, many of them don't know how to do this and don't know the importance of it. So I encourage you to support the bill. I encourage you to support adequate and early funding always for public education in our state. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Schmitz. We really appreciate hearing from you. We will go now to Stephanie Gish, who is in the room, followed immediately by Kathy Clark. If you would both come up, we'll make that transition, and then our last testifier will be Dr. Parody. And Ms. Gish.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Gish, and I am an early childhood educator here in Juneau at Discovery Preschool. So neuroscience over the last two decades has confirmed that the first 5 years of life are crucial for human development. Our experiences and interactions in early childhood lay the foundation on which we build for the duration of our lives. As infants, we are active participants in our learning, constructing knowledge of the world through our experiences. It's more than just preparing for kindergarten or parental bragging rights for early readers. Early childhood educators are trained to spot trauma triggers and to build resiliency in preschoolers. And this means that for many of Alaska's children, if statistics on abuse and neglect bear any weight, early learning programs could be the only place where healthy development of executive function is being fostered. Continued lack of investment in early education will continue to produce dire and costly results, both social and economic. The lifelong effects of adverse childhood experiences places a significant financial and social burden on our state. High ACE scores are correlated with poor physical and mental health, along with the increased likelihood of criminal behavior and unemployment. So in short, criminals are made from children who are abused and neglected, children who are out of opportunity's reach and cannot access healthy environments or attachments. You want to lower crime rates in Alaska? It all starts with early childhood education. And adversity doesn't just happen to the impoverished. Childhood trauma happens to far more children than we realize, and the results can last for generations. Learning begins at birth, and an infant's brain triples in size by age 3. Their super dense brains are eager to learn more about themselves and the world around them. It is important to note that the brain cannot distinguish one type of toxic stress from another. They have the same impact and capacity to impair health and well-being for a lifetime. If we honestly want to make a difference for current and future Alaskans, we will pave the way for high-quality care and education to begin during infancy. Programs that provide developmentally appropriate, high-quality continuity of care will generate greater academic, social, and economic success. I do urge the committee to support, or urge committee support of SB 6, and I thank you for providing me this opportunity to testify.
Well, thank you, Stephanie. Yes, great testimony. Appreciate that. We'll move on to Ms. Clark.
I'm just here as a concerned mom and a devoted mom to several kids in the Homer area. I actually came for high school students from Homer to Nikiski, but a friend of mine yesterday mentioned that this was going on, and I came in. I homeschooled my son in Talkeetna, and that was when they had first started introducing the primary program into the elementary schools as far as 3- and 4-year-olds. And his daycare that I took him to for social interaction happened to be the teacher that was going to be doing the preschool program, and she discussed with me getting him in. Because of him going into this program at 3.5, we discovered he had dysgraphia, which made a huge difference in how we approached his education. Had he not been given that opportunity to get into the school system at an early age, it might have gone unseen and unnoticed, and we might not have found it until 6th or 8th grade. By 8th grade, he had already transitioned into regular school classes as far as what his capacity was. He went to Flex for his final 1.5 years of school, and he is a successful graduate. He's actually getting his contractor's license, and he's 21. So I believe that early education is ultimately important for not only social triggers, but for learning disabilities that are off the charts. Dysgraphia is not a normal learning disability, something that could have been overlooked. Another concern that I've heard today is about the availability, capacity, and quality of childcare. In Homer, we don't have any. If we lose our Head Start programs and our early preschool programs, we have access to one church that does child care, that has any kind of a program for a child to learn. So it's cutting off an entire community of children that won't have that opportunity. And some of the parents, unfortunately, don't have the education to even sit and read with their children or do simple math. And I know some of these people, and the frustration level is horrible for these parents, because they're seeing their children left behind in a system that left them behind. And so I'm glad I had the opportunity to step in and just let you know, as a concerned mom about our schools and our kids and our areas, I'd really, really like for this to be pushed through. It's important.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Very effective testimony. Appreciate that. And congratulations on raising your children. And now we will ask Dr. Parody to sweep up and close up. Thank you, Dr. Parody.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lisa Skiles Parody, the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, representing superintendents, secondary and elementary principals, school business officials. And I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to testify in support of SB 6. This will be brief. Ms. Henley, Dr. Weiss, Principal Schmitz, and others have really laid an excellent background for the importance of this investment in early learning. But I do want to point out two things. As you know by now, in the legislature, our members work for months on a comprehensive look at what are the most important points, positions in policy that we should be focused on during the legislative session. So our 2019 joint position statements have early childhood education as one of our highest priorities, and our members all work on this, support it, have voted on it, and are fully vested in the positions in our position statements. And I'd like to share with you that ACSA believes equitable access to fully funded sustainable preschool programs provide a foundation of excellent social, emotional, and cognitive instruction to students. Research clearly demonstrates that early intervention and instruction is one of the best ways to increase student achievement across all demographics and create the greatest opportunity for all students to read proficiently by third grade. We believe so strongly in it that we believe that early childhood education should be considered as part of the public school funding through the BSA. And I would like to also remind the committee that my partners, the Alaska Association of School Boards and the Coalition for Education Equity and ACSA and all of our affiliates invested in a public opinion poll administered through Zogby Analytics. Zogby Analytics is a highly respected international polling and research company using industry standard methodologies with a margin of error of plus or minus 4.5%. And the public opinion poll was really administered so that we could have a better understanding of Alaska voter perspectives, both on pre-K and K-12 public education issues. And the question that we asked with regard to pre-K was, do you support or oppose state-funded public preschool? And the answer was overwhelming. 73.5% of Alaskan voters support state-funded preschool. Only 16.1 oppose, and 10.5 were not sure. I think that the evidence in terms of public opinion is clear. They support public-supported, state-funded preschool. And I will just close by saying yesterday, my colleagues, Norm Wooten and Sarah Sledge and I did pen an op-ed that was printed across the state yesterday in the ADN, and I'll submit that for in written testimony for your consideration. And close with thank you for your consideration of this bill. We urge you to pass it and agree strongly with the previous callers that you should look into the research on your own. And I think what you will find is that investing in Alaska early childhood programs is one of the most critical investments we can make in the future success of our children and of our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Parody. Senator Begich, any closing comments?
Closing comment, just for the record, my wife's name was just mentioned, so I want to put on the record that my wife is the executive director of the Coalition for Education Equity, which was a party to that study. Just want to make sure that's clear on the record.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that, and thank you, Dr. Parody.
Thank you, Senator Stevens, and Mr. Chairman, Senator Begich, I can assure you that your relationship with your wife had zero to do with our interest in understanding what the voters of Alaska want in terms of pre-K and public education. So I appreciate you adding that, but please know that your name never came up in our discussions about the importance of this topic. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, great testimony. Really appreciate the bill. We will, of course, set it aside for a further review, and we'll try and do some things on it in the interim. There's no further business coming before us, so we are adjourned at 10:53.